Old New York, Carmine Street Guitars podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Hulage. I'm sitting here with Rick Kelly. Rick, say hi.
Hey.
And Mike the Mike.
Hey, Cindy.
Hey. today we have another really special guest on, someone we've known for a long time now, Dylan Keefe of Marcy Playground, which is a band that Dylan. I remember even growing up with in the 90s. So cool. We should get into the interview, right, Rick?
Yeah, man, let's go.
Yeah.
This is Dylan Keefe.
What's up?
From Marcy Playground. He's here in the shop today playing the bass. Wow, this is the beast.
This is the beast.
This is the beast, man. Reverse head beast.
The
Yeah, the guy, he just wanted me to make him a bass too, the same one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you get that? Do you get asked to do these reverse necks?
Not that often. In fact, yesterday when I was putting that one together, I grabbed a set of tuners and opened them all up, and I went, oh, these are Dylan's tunes.
The reverse ones. Oh, that's right, because I had you like put lighter ones on.
Yeah.
Which are perfect, this thing. So this bass, when we're on the road, I carry this and another bass. I tune this down. We do a few tunes that are tuned all the way down to D. So so a whole step down. Uh-huh. And there is no difference in the performance of this bass when you tune it down. Like, this is, it's so solid. This neck, it doesn't do a damn thing.
All,
no, it doesn't move at all. So I tune it a whole step down, and I'm like, oh, this feels exactly the same way as any other. Yeah.
It's that Chelsea Hotel word, man.
Yeah. It's just like, it's amazing. I love this bass so much. And when I, like, I originally wanted the reverse, you know, as like a Dusty Hill tribute sort of thing.
What's the body? Where'd the wood come from the body?
This was Chumley's.
Chumley's, that's right.
And this is Chelsea Hotel.
So it's another CC bass.
Another CC bass. And then Waz, the lead singer of my band, I explained the whole thing to him, and he was like, that is now called the Beast.
The Beast.
So that's what it is.
Yep. That's the Beast.
It's your Beast bass. And the ocean,
all right. How'd you hear about Rick?
Yeah, so I work down here I work on a show called Radio Lab, which is a podcast. When these guys asked me to like come do the podcast, I'm asked to do like what you're doing for podcasts like all the time. I'm like, you guys are having a podcast? They were like, no, we want you to be on it. So I was like, great. But like maybe 8 years ago or something,
yeah,
I was trying to figure out when it was, 8 or 9 years ago. I was just walking by here and I was like, oh, there's a guitarist right here. I probably need something from it. I always need something. Always liked it. And I walked in here and, first of all, there was nobody there, which is just like so typical of this place. It's like you walk in and it's like, oh, this is a store. Like, there's definitely stuff for sale. It looks expensive. Are we supposed to just like walk out with it? I don't know. Anyway, so I just like stood there. But the first thing I noticed is the smell, because the second half of the store is a shop. And I grew up, my dad was a woodworker. And not just like as a hobby, it was like he made one of a kind furniture. So when I walked in, it just like threw me back. It was like what my house smelled like. I was like, oh shit, this isn't just a, and then I could see all this wood stack. I don't even think, Rick, you have it stacked out there anymore. But
yeah,
you
used I had to have it a lot this, out there. Yeah,
you had all this stack. And I was like, what is this over here? Anyway, I was just trying to like figure it out. And I just kept on coming back whatever. I have a bass I needed tweaked or something, and Rick would always just like do it right away, which is also something really rare. Like, you know, I'd just be like, hey, do you mind like setting this up? And he'd just like, you're like, yeah, sure. And he'd just like set it up. And I don't know, you can't find that anywhere. I know you probably don't do that anymore, but he was just doing it for me. And like, and then I started figuring out, I kind of wanted to mod some of my basses, and Rick was always like happy to do that. But I still hadn't made the connection between like the stuff that he was actually doing here. And at one point I just, we just started chatting because I felt like we got to know each other well enough. He didn't give a shit who I was or at all, which was nice. Also, he had all these famous people on his wall. So we started chatting, and I realized what he was doing, and I was like, oh man, I have to have one of these instruments. This place is so, the place is so amazing. It's like, I've been in New York for over 30 years and just feel like a New Yorker. And this, the whole place just felt like a throwback to like a different time, you know, like a different place. Like all these shops are getting like pushed out, and so it was like a combination of nostalgia about my dad, and you know, I wouldn't call Rick a father figure or anything like that.
You can call me that.
No.
Old enough to be.
No, but there was just like there was just that sense, and I was like, oh, maybe Rick, actually the first thing I thought, I don't know if you remember this, but the first thing I thought was like, oh, maybe Rick can make something out of my dad. Like I have all this unfinished shit of my dad's, just like, but beautiful wood that he picked out. And I was like, maybe he can make something. And we talked about it.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff is like super heavy though. And so it would have to be veneered, and I don't know, you were open to all that stuff. And finally I just settled on what I'm holding out in my hands, which is like Chelsea Hotel neck and Chumley's body. And then it was probably like, it took, you know, me coming in here for probably like 40 years. I think I was coming in every week being like, hey, how's that going under there? He's like, it's going great. Yeah, I'm doing fine. And then one day I was totally in no rush. Like I got plenty of instruments to play. It's more about like having this particular thing. And actually, one thing I wanted to say was like, I think something that drew me to, Rick in particular, and I kind of met Cindy later, I'll tell that story, but was that, like people doing what they love for their job is like such an attractive thing. And I've just found that in my life. I'm always attracted to like, you can sense it the moment you meet someone, they're doing what they love for their life's work. It's something like I traded with my dad and I, like we sort of like tried to always one up each other, like who's enjoying their life more regarding their work, you know? And he was an architect because he wasn't sure he could be a wood builder. And then he saw me become a musician and he's like, oh, fuck it. I'm gonna do exactly what I want to do, like my son's doing. We kind of trade that back and forth all the time, and so I can sense it in people when you meet people and realize they're doing what they love, and that feels rare and it feels special. And so like actually buying something like this, having it commissioned, along with like the city that I love, you know, just all of that wrapped into one thing felt like so special. And it was like, it was a no brainer, for me to like have him build it and also wait.
How long did it end up taking to?
No, for real, it was maybe like 2 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think it just depended. I don't think Rick knew me very well at the time. And we didn't know each other very well, and I was just another dude that liked to chat. He clearly likes to chat. If he feels like it. And also I will add, one day I show up and like while I was waiting for the bass, I just always wanted to show up and just be around the place. I showed up and there's this movie crew here, and I was like, what the fuck is this? I'm gonna rewind that. I had some work. I brought in a bass that I just bought online. I want Rick to look at it and sort of tell me what he thought of it. And I was in here playing it, like playing it at the front in the glass. And just like in the fucking movie, Jim Jarmusch walks in. And like this is before the movie was made. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, it was just me and Rick and Jim Jarmusch. And then Jim like takes the bass and he's like, oh, it's a nice, good find, you know, here. And I was like, oh, well, this is so cool. That also doesn't happen every day that you're just like hanging out, you know, and Jim Jarmusch. And another, I hate to keep saying this, but my dad's favorite movie, I didn't tell him at the time, I don't know why, was Stranger Than Paradise, an early Jim Jarmusch film. And I've hit myself every day since being like, oh man, why didn't I just tell him? Like, because it was such a weird movie for my dad to be his favorite movie. It's like so weird. And we saw it together in the theaters, when it came out. Like, and I always remember like, wow, what a strange movie. And that was my introduction to Screaming Jay Hawkins was from that movie. Yep, and so like all of these things. And I was just like, everything was just coming together. And I'm really not one of those people who feels like, oh yeah, everything's cosmic all the time. But it just was like, all the evidence was like overwhelming.
I think Jim would have loved that story too.
We'll tell him. Yeah. I'd love to tell him that. Yeah. I was going to at the premiere, and then I was like, the last thing he wants is another someone coming up.
And bugging. He would have loved it.
No, it's cool. I was like, I'll find some time to tell him.
Yeah.
But anyway, I came in here one day after that, and there was like this film crew here, and then I'm like, "What are you guys doing?" And they both he and Cindy. By that point, I sort of gathered that Cindy was in the picture. I was like, "What's going on there? Oh, they're making a movie," and it seemed very much they're making a movie. I don't know. This is like I was like, "Well, that sounds like a pretty cool thing." I'm glad that I was in when it was like the little shop that could. And once like the movie, like how long did that go on for?
It almost took 2 years to make it, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. We shot for like probably two months with pickups.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. All right. So I was like coming in and like looking and be like, okay, well, they're still in there. And then I just can't remember this, if I had picked up the bass before or after. No, it was after, because I remember in the middle of it, you were like, oh, actually I've been working on it. Like it's part in the move, some of the shots or something like that. Mm. And then, when I finally picked up the bass and like practically cried, which I just love this instrument. I brought back, I was like, I'm going to get, this means so much to me. And I'm sure it's like, I don't know, Rick's probably just like, whatever, this guy's like really sentimental. And I brought, I can't remember if it was a gold record or a platinum record.
Oh yeah. It's up there.
It's a platinum record. I brought it in. And I was like, hey, I want you to have this. Like my grandma.
It was your grandma's,
I had this from my grandma, and my grandma died, and so I've got an extra one. And you've got all these pictures of all these famous people up here. And I'm sure that Rick had no idea who I was or
Cindy
or
knew immediately. Really cared. Yeah.
And I think that's when I started to know Cindy. I was like, Cindy's like, I'll put it up. Something like that.
That's awesome. We show that to so many people too.
Oh really?
Lots of people. Oh, that's, and they all know who it is. They all know who you are and everything.
I'm great. That makes me happy. Do you know who Greg Calbee is? Have you heard that name? He's an album masterer. Mm. So he's a master engineer. Mm-hmm. And he's like the guy, right? Yeah. He's been doing this since they actually invented mastering.
Wow.
And I don't know if it's still like this, but he's done every record. He's got a handwritten, I should take you to his place sometime. This is the kind of guy love to meet. He has a handwritten note from John Lennon on like a little piece of paper. It maybe is a napkin even.
Yeah, wow.
It just says, and he doesn't have much in his studio, uh-huh. But he has this.
Yeah.
And it says, like, yeah, if you could blah, 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 lower the vocals in the mix any way you can, because I think he was mixing some of that stuff back there. And he was like, whatever you think, I trust your ears, John.
Wow.
And I was so like, cool. If there's, like, this guy never needs a resume ever. He's got John Lennon saying, like, I trust your ears.
Yeah.
On the wall. But in his office, like, or in his studio, it was years later, maybe 10, 15 years later, I came in and he had that up. I mean, this guy did, like, won a Grammy for Graceland. I think he did fucking Born in the USA. Like, he's done, like, every record. And he had that up. And I was like, come on, give me a break, man. When the client comes in, you put up their gold record, And he's like, no, I don't know. Like, I just was particularly proud of that record, so I left it up. And he's like, and everybody comments on it when they come in. And I'm like, cool. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So to some people, we're not just one hit wonders.
No, for sure. No, well, people know, and they really like, what they heard and reason why. Yeah, no.
Backstage, behind the curtain, there's an armchair with a secret engine, and you climb in and get naked watching star blazers. Wish you had their amenities to fend off your enemies in one big blast from your wave motion gun. So you reach down to that secret panel, and there's a whole raft of little buttons.
Yeah, the thing that, and Cindy, so I play, I want to top my other band. So I play in this band called the Back Alley Dolls, and it's a duo with Anya Alaferis, and I play double bass in that. And
Anya.
My plan is to have Cindy, like, do a wood burn of, like, the entire double bass.
Oh my god,
like, man!
No, I want the whole thing, like that violin that you did.
Yeah,
yeah. It would probably take forever. Maybe we'll start in parts. But,
oh my god, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Do you want gold leaf on it too?
Whatever the fuck you think.
Yeah, man. That's cool.
That's how I did the violin.
What kind of bass is it?
Oh, yeah.
It was all gold leaf, like
gold K. Old, it's not a K, but it's an old plywood.
Uh-huh. It's old plywood?
Perfect.
You sand the finish off and let her do it.
I've seen a bunch of these. It's got cool numbers carved into the neck, like
production
right behind
numbers
here.
Like, yeah.
No, this is like... it's like a school, like a school would do that.
School, yeah.
You know, they
yeah.
just, it's like sort of scratched in there or something like that. So it was somebody's, like, school bass at some point.
That sounded really good, too.
I was showing Rick. Yeah, I was showing Rick the video of you guys. And he was freaking out, going, how's he have that bass hooked up?
That thing sounds... Yeah, I was trying to figure out your pickup system.
Yeah.
Was it just a microphone, or...?
No, I use a violin mic here.
Attached to the bridge?
Yeah. It's actually attached to the tailpiece, and then it's pointing, like, right...
At the bridge?
Yeah, right near where the... So the sound post is on the inside.
Yes.
And is vibrating, like, all around the bridge. And then I have a David Gage pickup underneath the, like, one
side.
Oh, and
you mix those?
I mix them,
that thing sounded so good. I knew there was something going on there.
Oh,
it was pretty sophisticated.
I'm so glad,
I
mix it, like, on a little their acoustic image makes this amp that's, like, only this big. It's got two tens in it and a tweeter, but it's boxed in like this, and it has a mixer that you can, it's made to mix a pickup and a mic. So it's a lot of jiggering in every room you're in, but once you get it, it's like sound.
Oh, it sounded so good, man. I'm so full and rich.
I'm so glad.
What the hell has he got to
do? I love that thing powered so much, too.
Because it still sounds so stand-up, upright.
Yeah,
it didn't lose any of the acoustic of sound. You know?
Yeah, it's the worst when you hear, like, an upright sounding like an electric.
Yes, no.
What happened to my sister? First we take Manhattan. You know I really love to live beside you, baby. I love your body, your spirit.
Yeah.
You know what story I want to hear real quick?
Oh, yeah.
The one of the Katrina base.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shit, I forgot
hear
about that.
That story again. How'd that happen?
Yeah, so I was down in New Orleans, and there's this place called International Vintage Guitars down there, which is exactly what you'd expect it to be. It's like all these old guitars. And they had just, I think the previous year...
Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, it wasn't Hurricane Katrina. It was longer ago than that. But the previous year, this other shop that was very famous had closed, and they basically absorbed all their old gear.
Inventory. Yeah.
So I was just on tour there, and it's just something I like to do, is like go out and check out like a guitar shop. So I found this place. I drove over there, and they had all this incredible stuff. And I was looking at this fretless P bass, and I never like fretless basses, but then I just end up like, if the instrument seems cool, just like,
doesn't matter.
Yeah. And so I saw a little hairline crack on the back of the neck, and I was like, hey, can we just see like how far that hairline goes? And so this guy brought me back into the shop. It wasn't a shop like a builder's shop like this is, but it was just like a repair shop. He brings me back there. There's this old African-American dude back there whose name I cannot remember. I wish that I did. And it's just my own senior moments. Anyway, he was like the repair guy, and sweet old man. And we started talking, and he's like, oh, taking off the neck and stuff like that. And of course, just like I do in your shop, I'm like, what's that over there on the wall? And there was just this totally thrashed Tele bass on the wall, hanging over with a bunch of other stuff. But it was like all the finish head was peeled off and all kinds of parts and stuff like that. But I was like, oh, it looks cool, whatever that is. And he was like, oh, that was my bass, it was over at my friend's house, and it was in his basement, where we rehearsed for my church band, and it got flooded in Katrina, and so that's what's going on over there. And he was like, you know, the plan was that like we were gonna clean it up and like try to sell it, and I was like, well, I'm going to call you about that. he was like, yeah, we're going to clean it up. And it needed all new everything. It was just like the wood, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how to describe it. It was like the finish, old poly finish was coming off like a skin disease or something.
Yeah, it did. It looked like it was
so
just
crazy
peeling.
Looking.
It was peeling. And it was peeling. Definitely flooded because the chunks of the body were split.
Yeah, just disconnecting the glue joints.
Glue joints. And so, but it just looks so cool. And I was like, okay, well, when you guys put it together, you know, call me and I'll if you will, give me first shot at it. I want to know what that's like. And so I left my number, and of course I didn't hear from him. Then I called a couple times, and finally I called, and he was like, yeah, we still haven't gotten to that. And I was like, just sell it to me as is, you know, how much you want for it. And so I gave him what he wanted, basically, and he shipped it to me just as the parts. And I brought it into Rick, and I was like, this is what I should have done, like, from the jump, you know, of course, is just bring it to Rick. And Rick was all into it, and I was just like, he just sort of agreed, like, let's make it, let's put it together so that it is functional, but retains as much as like the mess that it is.
Yeah.
If you just like restore
it's beautiful,
it. To, yeah, it's beautiful bass.
Yeah.
I might actually bring it in and have you like take some of the weight. It's so fucking
so heavy. Yeah.
It's so heavy. Like underneath the pickguard, we could chamber
yeah,
it a little bit
open
or something like that. But because then I'll actually wear it. Like if I play that set with it on, I would like to kill my back. Yeah. But it's so beautiful. And so then he set it up and cleaned it up and he's like, oh, I've got this pickup that was made specifically for Alan Woody, bass player of Government Mule and
Allman Brothers.
Allman Brothers. it was made for him, this one pickup. Who is it?
Larry DiMarzio.
Made the pickup. He's like, it would be perfect on his bass. He made it for Alan, who's a friend of yours, right?
Yeah.
And then he never...
He died, and it never got it.
Right?
And he never picked it up. He never got it. I told him about it, and he was supposed to come into the city again. He had just left the night he died. He was just here.
And
then within a week, I got that pickup, and I was going to put it in one of his bases. And then, he never made it out of the hotel room. From leaving here, he went to wherever he was going back home, down south, and he died.
He was like out at the airport. Like
he was in a motel near the airport. Yeah. And he missed his flight or something. And wound up cardiac arrest or something happened. Yeah.
He tells me this story. Like when I brought the bass and he was like, oh, that would be the perfect pickup to put in this bass.
Yeah.
Which turned out to not physically be perfect to put in the bass. Yeah. You had to do like some serious like genius work routing with it. And so that bass has that pickup.
Yeah.
And then
Before you
burned it, you did the pick guard too? I can't remember.
I don't remember what it was.
The pick guard, I should have brought that one in too.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, Cindy. By then I knew Cindy well. And we chatted every time I came in here. And I love her burn work. And I was like, I wanted something that was going to like be... like I don't know, something that made me think of like
kind of like representational of New Orleans.
And like and so we went back and forth a bunch of times about these skull designs, and she right under the pickup, which is here at the neck, all this space is this beautifully burned skull. Facing this way.
I remember.
It's so badass.
That's cool.
It is the coolest looking thing, which is why I need to have it like the weight reduced.
Because
I can play it. It's.
I don't remember it being that heavy.
Super heavy. Yeah, it's super heavy.
What year is it?
I don't know. It's a 70. It's a mid 70s.
Yeah.
I think it's probably like...
That's when they were at their heaviest.
Yeah, yeah, right? It's like 75 to 77. Yeah.
When CBS took over, they didn't really know how to order the right ash. You know, Leo used to call it punk ash, which we call swamp ash today.
Right.
And they were just ordering ash. First, they used up what he had left. And then when there was time to order new wood, they ordered ash. And what they got was like baseball bat ash, black ash, white ash. Stuff is, you know, like boat anchors. All the tellies from those years and all this, you know, the bases were super heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insanely heavy. And I don't know if the water damp. Well, I don't know what that.
No, the water didn't do anything. It was just really dense ash to begin with, you know. And even, I don't know, some of the older ones weren't that light either. But, you know, the 70s, by then, the older trees were harvested. They were smaller and a lot heavier, the wood inside. And so all the guitars from 70s on were different than 60s and 50s.
Right, right.
You know, from Fender.
Yeah. I remember that guy's name. Like, so this bass was like a church gospel.
Yeah, bass church gospel. He's probably a great bass player.
Has
a whole story behind him too.
Totally. Yeah.
Maybe
I'll try to contact him again.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, but he was sweet, and like it just his poor bass got trashed. But yeah,
it's back working again.
A new life.
It's alive.
A new life.
When you kiss me, heaven sighs, and though I close my eyes, I see Vivian Rose. When you take me in your heart, I'm in a world apart. A world where roses blow. And when you speak, angels sing from above. Everyday words seem to turn into love songs. Give your heart and soul to me, and life will always be the Vivian Rose.
I don't like doing this.
What?
I don't know. Rick, you start.
Start what?
It's weird. weird when he's gonna.
Well,
you know.
Are you happy that he was here?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm so glad you came by, Dylan. Yeah, we had good conversation.
That's so awesome.
Oh my god.
One of my favorite parts I think it's in the movie is when you guys are talking about like the phone and like kind of just like I think I was actually in here one time when you like you first got the phone.
When I first got the cell phone. Yeah. I hate that thing.
Just
still.
Like get this out.
Get this thing out of here.
Yeah.
I forget it half the days. I leave it home. I forgot all about it. Oh yeah. I only bring it in now cuz I take pictures of whatever I'm finished.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Put it on the
Instagram. Yeah, he's just
thing.
Got bikes and but, guitars yeah. on his phone. That's it.
And old hot rods. Yeah, I like rods. Getting all the Instagram updates of the old hot rods.
Well, because I know podcasting.
Yes.
I will say, like, I gotta run, guys. It's been so lovely to be here as always. I've missed you guys so much since the pandemic. Like, I really in fact, I the one time I came in, probably about a month ago or something, it was like after I hadn't seen you guys for a while. And I think I came in and I heard like Cindy from the, she's like, we're closed.
We're
like,
closed. Don't come in here.
I was like,
no, we don't even
I think you'll remember me, guys, right? Anyway, no, it's one, actually, it was one of the best things about working down here is just coming and visiting you guys.
Yeah, we miss you coming in during the day.
I miss it so much.
Yeah, no, it's so great to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see the Back Alley Dolls.
Yeah,
Me too.
We were supposed to play on Wednesday, but we there's a story behind that name. We had we were texting back and forth, and I said that I was asking her about something having to do with like her tips or something like that, and she was like, I don't know, I'll find out tonight. And then she wrote back to me. She was like, oh, by the way, I was dead on about something. That's what she wrote, right? So mm-hmm. she texted that, and it auto-corrected to, "I was back alley dead about that." and then I wrote back, and then she just sent it, and I was like, "Back alley dead. That's hilarious."
That's
like
what?
She's like, "Oh, I guess that'll be like the name of our band, the back alley deads." So that's what we said, and we were like, we were super hooked on that, and then a couple of people, very key people, were like. Yeah, that's too close to the Grateful Dead. Like, this sounds like you'd be a Grateful Dead. And so, in the moment they said that, I was like, okay, then it's the Dolls.
Back Alley Dolls.
So cool.
So, anyway, yeah, no, I'm super psyched about that band. And Marcy, we just played our first gigs back from the pandemic out in California.
Oh, yeah, cool. Oh.
And we'll see, like, what other variants are going to be thrown our way.
Oh,
right?
My God.
But I think we had to cancel, like, 12 gigs this summer, and so we'll probably I think they're rebooked for like March or something like that. Mm. But I'll let you guys know when.
Yeah, let's know.
Oh my
but
God.
I'm gonna be
back
here
to
a thousand times in the meantime.
All right, good.
So. Yay!
Thank you guys so much.
In your ear. Podcast Network.